Welcome to Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr. and the Citadel Church of Jacksonville. We invite you to stay tuned as Bishop Hill brings to you a relevant word for the real world. Come with me now to a service already in progress.
Mark chapter 9. I want to start at verse 14. And I just want to hit a couple of verses as an introduction. Verse 14 says, "When they returned to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd surrounding them. And some teachers of religious law were arguing with them. When the crowd saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with awe and they ran to greet him. 'What is all this arguing about?' Jesus asked. One of the men in the crowd spoke up and said, 'Teacher, I brought my son so you could heal him. He is possessed by an evil spirit that won't let him talk. And whenever the spirit seizes him, it throws him violently to the ground. Then he foams at the mouth and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast out the evil spirit, but they couldn't do it.' Jesus said to them, 'You faithless people, how long must I be with you? How long must I put up with you? Bring the boy to me.'" Now we'll dig into a few verses beyond that, but I want to remind us of the premise that we have for this new year. Of course, our overriding theme is the fact that we will faith again. All right. You and I must live by faith as people of God. Our faith has to be the foundation by which we live, and that faith must please God. Now, I want you to remember, if you will, the two aspects of faith that God is pleased with. First, one must believe that God is, that God exists. God exists not only in some ethereal manner, but he exists in your context, in your life, and in your situation. You should never see any problem, circumstance, or predicament that you have as being absent of the presence of God, because there's always space for God in your situation. You must believe, however, that he exists even there in your problem, even there in your mess, God exists. Secondly, you must believe that he rewards those who diligently seek him. Watch it now. Wherever you are, God is there, but your job is to seek him out. You must pursue God in everything. And when you pursue him, he rewards your search with what you actually need: himself. Please don't forget that. God rewards your search with even himself. So now you have the very identity of God awaken in your life, awaken and alive in your situation. And know this, God is never not God. So wherever or whatever your life needs in that moment, faith causes that aspect of God to manifest. Let me state that again, please. God is never not God. So whatever you've got going on, when you realize in that moment, in that situation that God exists, and you search for him in that problem, in that mess, in that catastrophe, God, who can never not be God, in that moment allows us to realize or to see manifested the aspect of him that we need in that moment. That is what faith that pleases God looks like. But like we found out on last week, there are moments where our faith does not please God. He is not happy. And so the question has to be asked, what happens when our faith doesn't please God? What happens when those who are supposed to have faith don't? And as a result, they can't help others to strengthen their own. This is a very familiar story. It's referred to in our Sunday school lessons as Jesus and the Mount of Transfiguration. In the verses that precede what we read, Jesus has taken just three of the disciples, Peter, James, and John, and there, the glory of God is expressed in him, and his very physical image changes before them. He is transfigured. They see him with their eyes, physically, what they had once only seen in their heart. Understand now, watching Jesus perform these miracles, watching Jesus heal blinded eyes, watching Jesus and hearing his words had to first find its place in their heart. And as a result of finding that place in their heart, when they saw the physicality of it, they could receive it because they had already seen him as God in their heart. After that, Jesus now leaves the mountaintop, transformed in his image. All right. And when he returns, he finds the other nine disciples engaged in a heated argument with the scribes and some other people in town. And so Jesus asks in verse 14 or verse 16, what's all of this commotion about? Like, what's going on here? And then there's one guy, the father, who speaks out and he starts to tell his story. Now, pay attention to the story. He says in verse 17, I brought my son so you could heal him, Jesus. Jesus, I showed up. I came to the service today because I wanted you to heal him. Now, Jesus, you weren't here. You were up on the mountain. Okay. So I asked your disciples, verse 18, to if they would take care of the situation. Because these are your disciples, Jesus. And I think this is almost an allegation when he says, I asked your disciples, but they couldn't do it. And immediately I am convicted by the fact that if you walk with Jesus, if you possess the name of Christ over your head, if you call yourself a Christian, there is an expectation of you to be like Jesus. And so what that does is it forces us to answer the question, can people get from you? Can people get from me what they can get from Jesus? Because we are the ones who represent him. We are the ones whose life is supposed to be different because we walk with him. We are the ones whose conversation, whose hope is supposed to be higher, whose conversation is supposed to be different, whose life is supposed to be overwhelmingly a sharp contrast from everybody else who doesn't have him. And so as a result, there's this expectation that if you know Jesus, you ought to be able to present to me that which I can also get from him. But that's not the case. That's not what happens in the text. Jesus is not in place, so to speak. And as a result of Jesus not being in place, this man, this distraught man, this amazingly distraught man who's got a son. Come on, parents, you know what it's like if your children are plagued with a problem. They have an issue and you've done everything you possibly can in order to make things better for them, but things are not better. This is the condition of this man, but he has heard, he has maybe even seen, he's spoken to someone who has been with Jesus, who's been touched by Jesus. And so he makes up in his mind that he is going to take his problem to Jesus. But when he comes to where Jesus is, he finds Jesus's people, but he doesn't get from them what he is supposed to get from them. And when Jesus hears this, you got to look at his response, because unfortunately, what gets presented in this moment is not faith that pleases God. And I'm not talking about this man. I'm talking about the disciples. Watch what Jesus says to them. You faithless people. Oh my God. And now, unless you think that he's talking to someone other than the disciples, please make sure that you remember in verse 18b, he says, I asked your disciples, but they couldn't do it. So the subject is still on the disciples. And so verse 19, when it says Jesus said to them, he's still talking to the same them, they disciples that the man was referencing. And he says to this group of people who are closest to him, who have walked with him, who have witnessed his miracles, you are faithless. Matthew's account of this particular text adds the word and perverse. You faithless and perverse people, you corrupted thinking people. Please don't miss this. He offers to them the understanding that at this moment they are faith bankrupt. All right. And they shouldn't be. They should have an account that is well able to have supplied for this man's need. And it doesn't. And Jesus is questioning. I won't go so far as to suggest he is as angry as he was with Mary and Martha and them. However, I will suggest that there is, as one has stated, a holy impatience to the tone of Jesus when he chastises verbally his disciples. How long must I be with you? How long must I put up with you? Bring him to me. Now, this is important. This is really important. So I want you to hold on to the response of Jesus. He is impatient. He now chides the disciples because they didn't have what they needed to give to this man so that his boy might be healed. And so Jesus says, bring him to me. So they, watch verse 20. They brought the boy to Jesus. Who is the they? The disciples who get presented with a problem and they can't handle it, but there's an expectation that they should have. All right. But they can't. And so Jesus chastises them. And then they bring the boy to Jesus. And soon as he does, the evil spirit sees Jesus. And it threw the child into a violent convulsion, verse 20 says. And he fell to the ground, writhing and foaming at the mouth. Now, I'm tripped out because what's interesting to me is I want to know what the spirit sees in Jesus that he didn't see in the disciples. What does this evil spirit see in Jesus that he didn't see in the disciples? What is it about Jesus that causes this spirit immediately upon seeing Jesus to throw this boy around and to make things difficult for his life in that very moment? I want to suggest to you that even the problems you have know when they're about to be over. They do. That honestly should have been good news for somebody. You should be dancing in your living room right now. You should be running around the bedroom or flipping pancakes like it's nobody's business right now, because I just told you even your problems know when they get to Jesus, things have got to change. Now watch this. Watch this. Jesus is in no rush to deal with this situation. He literally engages in continued and extended conversation with the Father. This boy has this evil spirit and it is showing out in front of Jesus, and Jesus is calm. The whole time this boy is being tormented by this devil in his face, he is writhing in pain. He is foaming at the mouth. He is convulsing. He is literally having a full out fit. And Jesus, almost with more calm than a person should have in this moment, simply says to the Father, how long has this been happening? Oh, this is beautiful to me. He is in no rush because Jesus knows the problem will be resolved. Can I ask you a question? What's your level of composure when your problem is acting its worst? What's the level of composure? How much patience do you have when your problems are really tripping? I mean, when things in your life are really going haywire, you are supposed to maintain a level of calm. This is what Jesus is showing us by his own behavior. You can have a level of calm even in the face of a full out display of your problem. He does. How long has this been happening? Jesus asked the boy's father. And dad talks to him since he was a little boy. He goes further and he tells him how significant the problem is. The spirit often throws him into the fire or into the water, trying to kill him. Have mercy on us. Look at this father. Can't you feel this pain in the father? His son is literally in the presence of the one who's most able, according to his reputation, to help him. And it's doing exactly the same thing it did so many times before. And all this father sees is his son's life on the line. And he literally in this moment pleads with Jesus, help us if you can. Help us if you can. Now, I want to make sure that I can convey to you the level of confusion I think I have right now. And I'm saying confusion. It's probably a different word to express this particular emotion, but or this particular state of mind. I'm perplexed. I'll say that. Because it was a statement of faith for this man to even bring his son to Jesus. It was. And yet in this moment, he seemingly questions the ability of Jesus to supply for his problem. Help us if you can. And Jesus says, what do you mean? Verse 23, watch this. What do you mean if I can? Jesus asks, anything is possible if a person believes. And the father instantly cried out, Lord, I believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. It's an amazing contradiction. He's got to fight the juxtaposition of the part of him that believes with the part of him that does not. And he says to Jesus, I am sure with tears in his eyes and sweat on his face, I do believe. That's why I came, Jesus. I do believe. That's why I brought my son. He was throwing fits the whole way here, but I brought him to you because, as it says in verse 17, I wanted you to heal him. I brought him so you could heal him. But Jesus, you weren't present. You weren't present. And so I was stuck with these 9 people that are your people who have lived with you and been loved by you and received your teaching and seen your miracles. They were workers in the miracles that you have performed. But now I'm wrestling, Jesus. Why is this man wrestling? I wonder. Maybe he's wrestling between faith and unbelief in this moment because his situation is so severe. Have you been there where you felt like your situation was so severe that nothing and nobody could help you? He's literally in his situation. He feels possibly too far gone. My situation is too bad. If I had brought him to Jesus a year ago, maybe there would have been hope. Maybe there would have been an opportunity for Jesus to rid my life and to rid my son's life of this situation. Maybe, however, my situation is just too severe. But then maybe my faith was exactly where it needed to be. And that's why I brought my son to you, Jesus. But then I encountered your disciples and the parts of me that believed got weak. Please hear me when I tell you, it's just my own strong supposition that this man had enough faith to bring his son to Jesus. But when he doesn't meet Jesus first, he's got to deal with Jesus' people. And Jesus' people did not have in that moment the faith that they needed to get this man the help that would bring his son to healing and recovery. And so now this man, who I am sure had enough faith when he left home, is wrestling in his faith because he's had to contend with people who had an expectation of faith on them, but they could not provide. They did not have what they needed. They did not respond like they should have. Oh, faithless generation, hear me when I tell you, Jesus's angst is not with this man. And I am wrestling even with the fact that this man more than likely had all of the faith that he needed when he left his house, but he had to deal with somebody that are made for his faith to be weakened. Listen. I can't stay here, but I want to ask you this question. Have you ever been the one that was the reason for someone else's faith to be weakened? It's a strong indictment on us when people look at us, say we love Jesus. They look at us dance and worship God on our faces. They look at us and they hear the tongues that we speak in, and they see the things that we say God has done in our lives. But when they try to tap in to the faith that we have, they don't get what they need. And so as a result, their faith in God diminishes. Let me tell you why I believe this is the disciples' issue. Because if you read the story, I gotta get to the part, okay? But let me just tell you this. If you look at the story, when Jesus sees the crowd, verse 25, of onlookers growing, he rebukes the evil spirit, get up, get out. The boy falls out like he's dead. Jesus picks him up. And then later on, in verse 28, it says, when Jesus was alone in the house with his disciples, they asked him a question. Here's the question they asked him. Why couldn't we cast out that evil spirit? Huh. It's a good question. And I like the fact that they asked in the same way I would have when we were alone with Jesus. Jesus, don't embarrass me right now. You don't already call me faithless. But now that I got you to yourself, let me ask you, Jesus, why couldn't we do that? Why didn't I have what I needed to do that? And Jesus replies in a manner that is really startling when you look at it in the full context of what has been presented so far. Jesus says, this kind, verse 29, can be cast out only by prayer. Notice what he does not challenge them with at this point. Faith. He says to them, this kind that this man was dealing with in his boy was only going to come out one way, by prayer. One text, I believe the Matthew text says, by prayer and fasting. Now watch this. This suggests to me that in this story, Jesus's issue was not with them casting out the devil. Help me. Okay. Slow down, Terry Jr. Say it slow. Jesus's issue is not with them not being able to cast out the devil. That is not what he has a problem with. Here's where he has the problem. Go back to verse 15. These numbers running together. Maybe I should have used my glasses. Look at verse 15. When the crowd saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with awe and they ran to greet him. Okay. Verse 18b. I asked your disciples to cast out the evil spirit, but they couldn't do it. Verse 19, Jesus says, bring the boy to me. So they, who is they? The disciples brought the boy. Jesus, why we couldn't cast out the spirit? It wasn't even for you to cast out the spirit. It wasn't even for you. That it wasn't your role in that moment to cast out the spirit. Now, this is going to mess up some people's theology, okay? It wasn't your responsibility to take care of the evil spirit, disciples. Your responsibility is exactly what I told you to do in verse 19 that you did in verse 20. Bring the boy to me. Okay, that's it. If I was standing in a pulpit and I had on a robe, I would look over at Rockies and I would tell him to put me in D flat because we could ride right here. Watch this. The response of Jesus at the end of the story is that this kind doesn't go out but by prayer. But that's not my challenge. The chiding or the chastisement of Jesus to the disciples has nothing to do with the fact that they couldn't cast out the evil spirit. Here's what upsets Jesus is that at this point, up to this point, they have not learned that whatever problem you are presented with, faith that pleases God is faith that knows he exists and seeks him out in that moment because he rewards those who diligently seek him. All the disciples had to do when they are brought this young man is take him to Jesus. That's all Jesus wanted from them, to remember that when the problem is too much for you, seek me out. When things are going haywire, I'm not asking you to fix it. I'm asking you to remember to have enough faith to come to me. This is why I don't believe that Jesus is actually upset with the Father. He said to him, anything is possible if a person believes. God, I believe because I brought my son to you. Here is the moment of faith for a lot of us right now. We think that faith that pleases God is faith that does everything by itself. Disciples, ain't nobody tell you to cast out this devil. This ain't the devil on your level. This one was always meant for Jesus. Come on, hear me, somebody. There are problems you are trying to handle on your own. And the Lord's word to you today is I never told you to do this by yourself. I never told you to try to figure it out. I never told you to come up with a strategy. What I told you was to bring the problem to me. And here you are trying to be God, trying to be in control, trying to express what you think you have. And all you were ever supposed to do is bring the problem to me. Why am I yelling in this house? All you were ever supposed to do, disciples, was bring the problem to Jesus. Is this too simple? Should I have said it in the Greek? Jesus says to him, well, here's the problem. Look at it real big. Jesus says, y'all knew where I was, but you waited on me to come to you to see a problem. All you had to do was bring the problem to me. So when Jesus comes, He says to him, to the disciples rather, bring the boy to me. Verse 20, so they brought him. Who is they? The disciples. The ones who had the responsibility in the first place to get the problem to Jesus. Can I just suggest to you that some of us are still operating from a place of faith that doesn't please God. You think that the responsibility is on you to make everything happen, and it's never been on you. The responsibility is on God. Now listen, there are some devils that the disciples will have to cast out. This ain't that devil. This devil was supposed to be brought to Jesus. And they were supposed to know and have enough faith to not try to get in the way or the place of God. Because the man says, I brought him so you, Jesus, could heal him. You weren't present. So when I asked your disciples, they couldn't do it. I don't know. I don't know who this is for. Other than me. But what's real for us today is knowing to take our problem to Jesus, because when the problems present themselves, you got to see Jesus as existing in your problem and take your search for him, because it is those that search for him that he rewards. The search is simply this. I'll reiterate one of the points from last week. The search is simply this. Seeking out how God wants to reveal himself in that situation. That's it. Before you try to figure it out, search for God in it. Put your faith on it and look for God. You know, it's funny. Every time a situation comes up, every time a problem occurs in our country, there's always a group of persons who are going to say, we need to pray. Mm-hmm. And then there's probably a larger number of people who will suggest, we don't need to pray. We need to act. We need to work. And some of these people are believers who will suggest, I prayed enough. God wants me to move. And listen, there are moments where that is true. But there are moments more. And in every situation where God's requirement of us is to first consult him, to search for him, to express our faith that says, I know he exists and I'm going to go look for him in this situation. All of the disciples had to do. This is it. All the disciples had to do was take the boy to Jesus. Hey, this problem is too much for us. Let's carry him up. Thomas, Judas, come on. Matthew, come on. Y'all help us. We got to take him to Jesus. We know exactly where he is. And before we try to be something we are not, we're just going to take him to Jesus. That's the responsibility. I'm going to challenge you right now. The problem that you got going on in your life right now, right now, take it to Jesus. Before you try to engage your prayer partner, and then your prayer partner doesn't pray in a way that actually encourages your faith. It actually causes your faith to diminish. You start questioning if God can. Yeah, take it to Jesus. Before you run to your pastor, take it to Jesus. Does anybody hear what I'm saying? Before you take it to your mom or your dad or your grandmama because she's a prayer warrior, take it to Jesus. You put your faith on it. And when you do, he'll reward it. He does everything.
You've just received Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr. and the Citadel Church of Jacksonville. You may order a copy of this message in its entirety or a gift of any amount by calling the church office at 904-439-HOPE. You may also write us at P.O. Box 350-414, Jacksonville, Florida 32235. When you call or write, please reference the date the broadcast aired. We invite you to share and worship with us every Sunday at 9 a.m. and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Our church is located at 1057 Arlington Road. For directions and more information about the church, visit our website at thecitadelchurch.com. Again, that's thecitadelchurch.com. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr.